You are listening to Stirring the Pot on Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 FM, on beautiful Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Linda Nygaard.
And I'm Tom Conway.
Hello, Tom Conway.
How's it going?
Pretty well. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Now that I'm here looking across at your beautiful face.
Oh, he's a silver-tongued devil, this one.
That's
well,
right.
Just wanted to say hello, and we have a lot of little interesting things we're going to talk about today.
Yep, all about food stuff.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say foodie. I know friends of mine who will.
Hate that word.
Yeah, they'll slap you big
time.
I'm not a foodie.
It ranks right up there with another word that I hate, and I'm not going to say it. But it, you know, when you're referred to as a foodie, it's kind of an insult.
It used to be. I think what happened is anything like that,
overused,
when it gets in the vernacular, is where it becomes such a common
right.
thing where if you, you know, pick out spicy Fritos, you go, well, I'm a foodie. You
know? Yeah, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah,
I know what I'm doing. So how are you?
I'm good. It's been a week of I don't know, just sort of enjoying the beauty of being home and mm-hmm. doing stuff in the kitchen and mm-hmm. garden, and when we had those sunny days. And
well, you're just about to launch into heavy duty gardening season.
It's true. In fact, I put off a couple of these tasks that I have that are sort of annual things. And I go like, okay, I'll do it tomorrow.
I'll do it tomorrow. I know. I get
trimming,
that.
Like, and if people who don't garden, I'm sure just roll their eyes like shutters when I go, I have to trim my ferns back. But
yeah,
it's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
The Western sword fern is
so
a magnificent
beautiful.
Native plant that if... You don't have to trim it back. I usually give it every other year. But if you do trim it back,
mm-hmm.
man, it's gorgeous.
Well, and they get all brown and funky if you don't.
Yeah, and so that so you get a really robust green plant.
You know, you were talking a little bit, you were alluding to procrastination.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And I was listening the other day to some talk show somewhere, I don't know, and they were talking about why do we procrastinate? Like what is it? Because I'm a pretty good procrastinator.
Yeah.
I can do.
It's remarkable, especially in the Pacific Northwest winter.
Do you think?
Ugh.
Is it common?
It's common.
Well, I can do I'll get to it later. I can do it later. Anytime, any task. But this person was talking about what is it? What's in that psychological makeup that we know we have to do this, but why do we just say, no, I'm not going to do this? Well, his conclusion was, and I won't bore you with all the details.
Because you're a lazy old girl?
No, it wasn't that at all.
Oh, okay.
It was that we, as procrastinators, like let's say you have to clean your closet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do with that stuff. I don't want to do it. It's terrible. I think I'll go to the movies or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so you go do something else. And he said, it's because we focus on how difficult the task is going to be, as opposed to how good we're going to feel when we're done. And he said, so if you can switch your train of thought to the outcome and move toward it with that in mind, as opposed to, oh, this is so much work and I hate this and I don't want to do it. And if you can switch that, you'll feel a lot better.
It's true. I have a friend of mine. She refers to them as cheerful Charlies. And when she was growing up... Yeah, it fits her perfectly.
What's a cheerful Charlie?
Well, she said the same thing when she procrastinates. Her mother used to tell her, she goes, well, you just need to do a couple cheerful Charlies. So what they are is, instead of going like, I need to build Hoover Dam,
mm-hmm.
you pick a little thing. And like a 15-minute cheerful Charlie.
And
like,
just do one thing.
That would be, organizing your sock drawer, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or cleaning out the produce bin in your refrigerator.
Or
just
the fireplace.
One thing.
You know, that's
just
kinda,
do one thing. You know, and she even I said, you've really gone nuts when she was thinking about doing papers where you pull them out of a hat sort of thing and you
mm-hmm.
go like, but actually it's really kind of a good idea.
Yeah.
It's that chip away concept is really helpful in getting things done.
Well, it is, away. You know, and they always say, you know, one project, one pile at a time, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And I don't know if you read Anne Lamott's book years ago called Bird by Bird.
Mm-mm.
And she was inspired to write it by a conversation that her little brother had with her dad. And he was in eighth grade and he had a huge project to write about the state bird of every of all 50 states.
Oh.
And he, it was due the next day, and he hadn't started it yet. And so he was crying, and he couldn't do it, and oh my God. And he said, Dad, you have to help me. And Dad said, no, I'm not going to help you. You know, you backed yourself into this corner. You have to do it yourself. And he said, well, I don't know how to do it. And Dad said, well, son, bird by bird. And so, you know, that's kind of what we're talking about.
I like that. Yeah. Bird by bird.
Just bird by bird.
That's
yeah.
funny.
Yeah. So, so what's been going on?
Oh, you know, I had, I was just grousing, to my sister, her son, my nephew. It was his birthday's today. And there's something dramatic that's changed in the mail system.
As in M-A-I-L.
I'm sorry. Yeah, there you go. That's right.
Not well, like, the other one's a good topic, too.
We're
but
a law school.
Not
anyway.
Today.
The U.S. Postal Service.
Right.
Because I usually make my niece and nephew and my sister, and now that my
and a few others,
I'll make cakes for birthdays, mm-hmm. but then and I mail them, mm-hmm. and I have this sort of fail proof, which I'll divulge later if you want, how I do it, and but now it's like it's on a truck that you watch the tracking, and it left Seattle and it's somewhere near like Boise, Idaho, and you're going. They used to
wait
just
a minute.
It would always just fly. To Miami. It would be there in 3 days.
So now when you're checking it in, do you have to say this needs to fly? I mean, is that a way to get extra money?
I don't know. I got to check it out because it's just a recent thing. The last three cakes have almost taken a week.
Well, I was going to say, how many days does it take to drive to where he lives?
Yeah. So it's about 6 days to get
boy,
it there.
Boy, that cake will be nice and
yeah, exactly.
moist
may I
by then.
May I tell a cake story?
Yeah, sure.
So...
Oh, hi, it's Truman O'Brien.
Oh, hi. Hi, guys. Hey, I was in Vietnam on my birthday in mm-hmm. February, mm-hmm. and my mom sent me a cake.
Nice.
Well, it just so happened.
How old were you, Truman?
I think I turned 21. Yeah,
okay.
I did.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well,
breaks my heart.
I was on I took R&R, and I went to Bangkok.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was gone when this cake arrived.
Yeah.
Right? In fact, it probably arrived about the time I left. So I'm gone for a week, and I get back, and the mail clerk goes, O'Brien, get in here right now. Get in here. I said, what? He said, get this box out of the mailroom. There were ants everywhere.
Oh.
I mean, everywhere.
Oh, Mom.
He said, it's infecting my whole mailroom.
Oh.
So, but I had a cake that the ants enjoyed, but I didn't get
any. I would say you probably didn't get to eat that
one
did
bite.
You? Well,
not
you know, the
bite.
Thought's there.
That's what I
that's
thought.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
That's such a wonderful thing, though, that your mom,
yeah,
you know, her 21-year-old son mm-hmm. is yeah. at war. And
send me a cake.
Yeah. Sends you a cake. And
my mom sent me one when I was in college, my first year at college. And I was so yeah. lonesome and I thought I was going to die. And she sent me my favorite cake, and which was angel food at the time. So she sent me a
oh, my God. This makes so much sense about Clow Foodie now, but go ahead.
Will you leave me alone about the Clough Foodie?
No, I'm moving on to Angel Food Cake, but go ahead.
Well, at the time.
Okay.
I said at the time.
At the time
I was
okay.
young.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But my favorite frosting for it was squeezing fresh orange juice and mixing it with powdered sugar. So it was sort of a glaze. So really, it was just sugar
so
and air.
Far.
But she sent me a box with this cake in it,
uh-huh.
with three oranges and a little container of powdered sugar. So, you know, it was very sweet. It was really sweet.
Well,
yeah. It was sweet in more than one way.
Yeah. It's funny that my story is my mom would send, I think that's probably why I do it. Because when I was in college, she sent, my favorite cake was German chocolate cake.
Mm.
And my mom was well ahead of her time.
Mm-hmm.
She would wrap it. She'd make the German chocolate cake, three layers.
Mm-hmm.
She'd wrap it all up. I think she froze it before she mailed it.
Oh, probably.
And
yeah.
then she put it in a box, and then she popped popcorn. And and she filled it full of popcorn as the...
Sure.
Before we had popcorn.
Yeah.
you know, the fake
the
popcorn,
fake
the
styrofoam
popcorn.
Yeah.
And I would get it when I was in college, and I was the most popular boy on
well,
the floor.
Well, I suspect you ate the popcorn.
That was, we, yes.
I mean, there was no discerning taste.
I'm surprised we didn't eat
taste.
The cellophane,
yeah.
really, quite
yeah.
frankly. We'd lick the chocolate off of it.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah. It was really nice.
Well,
So what about, you know, I'm going to tell you what you were up to, because okay. there are no secrets in on Vashon. I was at the movie, going to the movie, and since I haven't cleared that their names be used on air, I'll just say
we can use their names.
Linda and I's friend, Joe and Evan. And was it Joe's or was it Evan's?
It was Evan's.
It was Evan's birthday. And the reason I know that is because I'm walking down the aisle at the Vashon Theater and I hear this, "Hey, Tom." And I turn around and go, "Oh, hey, how's it going, guys?" And he goes, "Good." He goes, "You know, I got a pie coming my way."
Joe must have said that. Yeah.
I said, "Don't I know?" Yeah. We were just talking about that, pie, that she was making you a coconut cream pie for your birthday.
Yeah. Well, that's not till April, because the one I just made.
What's this?
The one I just made was Evan's birthday.
Oh.
And it's Joe's birthday in April.
He gets one too?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
You can have one too if you want.
No, I didn't know if you wanted a different pie.
No. So it was a coconut cream pie. That's because that's Evan's favorite pie, mm-hmm. and his mom used to make coconut cream pie instead of birthday cake for him.
First of all, I should interject. Aren't moms wonderful? Go
Aren't
ahead.
They moms? They hey, it's going to be Mother's Day pretty soon.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I gave him a gift certificate for his birthday, and I said, "This entitles you to the pie of your choice." Mm-hmm. And so he chose coconut cream, and I said, "Sure, that's fine." So I took it over to their house. And I had a piece with them, and it was quite wonderful.
Did you stay until they offered it?
I sat there till they offered.
They said, "This is really nice, isn't it? Good. We're going to have dinner now. Bye.
Bye. See you later. Bye. Nice of you to drop it off. And I'm like, wait. I got to have a bite. Is it any good?
Why is she staring outside the window?
No, they were very gracious.
Okay.
But I only got one piece. Anyway, so we were sitting at the table having our pie and chatting, and I said, "Well, Joe, you can have one for your birthday too." And he said, "Well, good." And I said, "And what kind would you like?" And he said, "Coconut cream." I said, "Oh, you guys have twin likes, twin favorites." So anyway, it was a good pie.
Yeah. That used to be a thing when I used to work downtown, is I would, everybody in our office building, we were two blocks away from Dahlia Lounge, and, it wasn't a bad thing.
Dahlia.
Yeah, anytime anybody had a birthday, every other person would manage to get one of those coconut cream pies from Dahlia Lounge.
Well, I looked up Dahlia's recipe.
Uh huh.
And it's good.
Is that what you use for your pie? How'd you make your pie?
I didn't use that recipe.
Oh, okay.
I just made a regular butter crust.
Because that one's whipped cream, too.
A lot on of top, cream. Yeah. And I asked Evan what he preferred, and he said meringue. And mm-hmm. I do, too. I always prefer meringue. I just do.
Sure.
So
you are sophisticated.
More than angel food cake.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah. But I just kind of did a little research and looked at different recipes, and I've made them. You know, I haven't made one for a long time, but... Uh-huh. I wanted it to be as coconut could be, so I used coconut cream.
And that is the challenge.
It is the challenge, because it could be just
a whipped cream kind of creamy,
yeah. custardy, with a couple flakes of coconut on it, and that's not coconut pie.
That ain't it.
So I put coconut cream in it. The recipes I looked at called for coconut milk, but I thought, well, cream will be better, so I made coconut cream.
Still in the can? The kind in the can. Okay.
Yeah. And then... another recipe called for half and half, and I thought, I think heavy cream will be good.
No, exactly.
You know, so I put heavy cream and coconut extract and more coconut than they ask for.
Absolutely.
Always.
They're all stingy.
And then Tom Douglas's recipe, which I find interesting, has flaked coconut in the crust. Mm-hmm. He puts that in the crust. I wasn't in the mood, so I didn't. But... then I forgot to sprinkle the coconut on the top of it, but the meringue turned out quite beautifully. You saw a picture.
I saw the picture. I wondered what had happened there. Like what?
It's like, what's that mistake?
Are you sure this isn't? I think this is a picture she uses for her lemon meringue pie as well.
Well, it looked like it, didn't it? Yeah, it really did. Well, those happen to be my two favorite pies.
Yeah.
Well, wait till cherry season gets here, and then that'll be
Thank
my favorite.
Thank God you have evolved.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's kind of what I did this week, and it was the coconut thing. You know, you were talking about coconut last week. You did some coconut cooking. What'd you do?
Yeah, it was. It's kind of, I think it ended up that we. For
we
some
both
reason,
were doing coconut.
The universe, was it Mercury retrograde? I think it was Mercury
it still
coconut
is.
Retrograde or something.
Yeah.
we were all about coconut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I made this recipe that I saw, of course, online. But it was mainly because this really fun cook, Carolina Gellin, I think, or Gellin, she had a video of it. And she's so engaging and fun, and you watch her for 5 minutes, you go like, oh, I can do that. Of course, it doesn't take you 5 minutes.
Well, right, right.
But it's basically you use chicken thighs,
mm-hmm.
and you pan fry the chicken thighs. You can do it boneless or with bone, whatever mm-hmm. you do. And then you take them out, and then you saute onions and and then you put olive oil in there, and you put rice and salt and pepper and paprika,
mm-hmm.
and you're heating up you're trying to get kind of the fat around the
mm-hmm.
The rice,
mm-hmm.
and then you put in a couple squishes of garlic cloves, and then you put in a cup of coconut milk and a cup of water.
Mm.
You mix it all up with the rice,
mm-hmm.
and then you put the and then you zest a couple Meyer lemons or regular lemons.
Yeah.
You can do a squeeze of lemon juice into it for, as they like to say, a little brightness.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add a half a cup of shredded coconut, and then you stir it all up, and then you put your chicken on top, and mm-hmm. then you cook it low and slow for like...
On top of the stove.
It doesn't go
in the oven.
You could do it in the oven if you had like a lid. You lit it.
Yeah.
It's lidded. But
yeah.
I did it on top of the stove.
That sounds really
good.
Super
low, super low. Like,
yeah.
So nothing was going to burn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good. And then I shut it off and let it sort of residually bake for another 15 minutes just mm-hmm. to make sure that it was cooked through,
mm-hmm.
and the rice is sort of nicely gummy and sticky and
nourishing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really good.
But yeah, chicken and coconut, a great combo.
It is. And yeah, and the coconut milk for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I made, interestingly enough, and really we did not plan this.
Mm-hmm. No.
I made...
We're so simpatico.
So in sync, yeah. I made a coconut pumpkin soup pumpkin curry soup. That was, it would have been really good had I not decided it needed more curry than I put some in and I went, it needs more.
Uh-huh.
And I put a giant blob of curry, red curry paste in it. And I tasted it. I thought, oh man, this smells so good and it's so beautiful. And I tasted it and my ears about blew off. I couldn't eat it. It was terrible that I did that, but I can tell it would have been good.
Yeah, you know what's really great? What you can do about curry too now is you can buy a lot of the curry paste.
Well, that's what I use.
Is that what you use?
Little in the jar.
Yeah,
you know. Well, actually, no. This one comes in a container. It was like a pint of it that I got at some store somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's really, really powerful. It's way more powerful than that Thai kitchen stuff that you get at the grocery store.
Right, like the Pad Nang curry.
Yeah,
and
And I, you know, I'll just use it more sparingly next time,
mm-hmm.
for sure. So, well, you know, did you make anything else coconut? Oh, and then I made the coconut pie, yeah.
Yeah. You know, one thing I've done, my other big coconut fest this week is I make granola. And since I had bought like two big packages of coconut, I made a homemade granola and I put coconut in it. And that's kind of a game changer. It really makes it great. It goes from really good to great stuff.
Well, you know, we were talking about coconut so much, I decided to look around and see where it came from and how did it get here?
From a tree.
It's from a tree, yeah. Well, the earliest evidence of coconut in writing anyway is about 3,000 years ago when it came from Asia, or maybe 4,000 years ago. Yeah, 4,000. And India and Pakistan were the first recorded coconut users. Oh. And it was used in its entirety at that time. And then, you know, you can go through this wonderful history of what happened with coconut and how the Arab countries used it in trade. You know, they were so big in the spice trade. Mm-hmm. So they adopted the coconuts too. And it became really a culinary cornerstone in many places. And I read, oh yeah, here's what I wanted to be sure to tell you, that it was introduced via sea trade to Europe in the early 16th century, so 1500s. Mm-hmm. And the European explorer Vasco da Gama, remember learning about him?
Indeed, I do.
He encountered it on trade routes to India. And initially, Europeans were more fascinated by the coconut as an object. Uh-huh. And they didn't really know how to eat it, but he would bring these home and they'd smash them or open them, and maybe they ate it and maybe they didn't, but they cleaned the meat out for sure. And then they decorated the inside. They used them as objects, and the insides were decorated with jewelry and gold, and they were like art objects.
Funny.
And I don't know that they ever really ate the coconut. And then when it got to America, of course, it was part of colonialism and the slave trade. And that's how it got
here.
Yeah,
I think, in fact, one of a really good recipe I have for coconut pie is one from New Orleans. And it's a coconut custard that you bake. But it was there where sort of like the first coconuts kind of were brought from Central and South America.
Well, the first coconut pie recipe that they can find is 1881.
Oh yeah.
And that was published by an African slave whose name was Abby Fisher in her cookbook, What Mrs. Fisher Knows About Old Southern Cooking. Huh. And that was in, what'd I say? 1881. And then there's another book called Ellie's Housekeeping Made Easy. And that is another coconut pie recipe. But, the first American sort of modern style is 1895. And that was published the same year that the first shredded coconut factory opened in America.
Oh yeah.
In 1895.
Wasn't it Baker's Sweet or something?
I don't know. Oh yeah, it was, because it was Franklin Baker's shredded coconut.
That's
you're so smart, Tom.
I'm a coconut genius.
Yeah, you are.
You know, it probably stems from when I was a little boy and I was at my grandmother's house. I never forget this because I always wondered why there were like magazines in the bathroom.
I still don't understand that.
What's that about? But she had Reader Digest. And I remember I was riveted to this for some reason, this little article about coconut, and it was like the coconut palm, the most useful tree in nature. Mm. And it had like 101 uses that people had for the coconut tree.
Bathroom learning.
It was bathroom learning.
That is bathroom
You can make
learning.
A toothbrush. You know, they make toothbrushes out of those.
Out of coconut shell?
I kind of think, though, the date palm is probably...
Even more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, give me a good old medjool date, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're so good. I saw some today for $12 a pound.
Oh, I'll pick you up some next time when I'm...
bulk.
Yeah, when I go get bulk.
Yeah. Well, you know, now there's just so much emphasis on coconut, like coconut water and coconut milk. And by market share, coconut water is 38% of the entire coconut
Seriously?
Market. Yeah, coconut water.
And is it just what's inside the coconut?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I haven't looked at the ingredients when you get the jars or the cans that say coconut water. If it's all coconut water, I don't know, because I don't drink it. Coconut milk is 18%. Desiccated coconut, which is what we use, is only 5% of the market.
Wow. Which is not to be confused with desecrated coconut.
No, we won't desecrate it.
We won't talk bad
about
it.
We won't desecrate it. But it's also...
That's pretty... That's surprising.
I know. But, you know, coconut water is so very hip now.
That's true.
You know, I mean, that's a thing. I wanted to talk a little bit about the archaeology. You know, there are archaeologists who have been interested in coconuts. and they're finding evidence of them.
That... Of macaroons on Egyptian reliefs. <Yeah. laughs>
Well, the coconut in Sanskrit means God's fruit.
Ah.
And it was, they have discovered ancient texts from 3000 BC. Mm-hmm. 3000 BC.
Wow.
That's a long time ago. In Buddhist writing. And they're used in fertility and marriage rituals. The Hindu goddess of well-being, Lakshmi, is often shown holding the coconut. And the Hindus often initiate any activity they're doing by breaking a coconut to ensure the blessings of the gods.
You know, there's also a new, not a new, it's a, but it's one that's made more present, or I've seen, is where they're eating the coconut meat of a sprouted coconut. It's a totally different creature.
Oh.
When you get a sprout out of the coconut,
yeah,
the solid meat of the coconut becomes more of a spongy,
like mushy.
Yeah, something else. And I've never tried it. But
it doesn't sound very good.
Well, it doesn't, but it seems to be like it's quite a little trend I've seen lately. I know.
Well,
if you take the two halves of the shells, you can make a horse clap.
Yeah, for radio.
Or a bikini.
Yeah,
there you go. Or a bikini. But you need the palm leaves for that, too.
That's true.
Yeah. And then another interesting little factoid I found is that in Islamic ceremonies in Zanzibar, coconut oil is used in the blessing of newborn babies.
Oh.
And they bless their newborn babies with that. I just love that idea.
Yeah, you could definitely understand just from this magnificent huge seed, you know, mm-hmm. just how mm-hmm. much life sprouts from it.
Yeah, it does. So I think I just had a lot of fun thinking about
coconuts
this week, you know.
And hey, you made me think of something.
What?
When you said, you're talking about the Islamic ritual.
Mm-hmm.
What a lovely show you had with Sharon and Celine.
Sharon Briskman and Celine.
Yeah.
I want to say Celine Dion.
Yeah.
Celine Demir. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you expand on that any? Or did you have good feedback on it?
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
We did that last week, and Celine pointed out to me that, you know, Passover and Ramadan and Easter and Nowruz mm-hmm. are all not on the same day, but they're all kind of happening at the same time. And Celine and I were going to talk about Ramadan, because mm-hmm. she's Muslim and she knows everything mm-hmm. about how they did it in Turkey and what they do now.
And for those of you who might not know, Celine is our other co-host,
yes.
who alternates weeks with Linda.
Yeah.
And is a lovely, lovely human
lovely
being.
Woman.
Yeah.
One of the best cooks I know,
mm-hmm.
really. So I was thinking, my friend Sharon Briskman is Jewish, and I was thinking, I was actually reading because I was curious about Seder, and I asked Sharon a few questions about it one day, totally unrelated to the radio. And she said, well, I'll loan you my book of what we use for Haggadah. I said it wrong. Mm-hmm. I said Haggadah, and she said, no, it's Haggadah. Okay, so I started reading about it, and I've been to a Seder dinner or two, mm-hmm. but I'm still curious, very curious about all the significance. And so we talked about that. And then I thought, wouldn't it be fun to have both of them in the studio at the same time?
Yeah.
And neither of them knew the other. So we sat here and had the most wonderful conversation about Islam and Judaism and mm-hmm. how the two cultures really started in the same way, with mm-hmm. the same emphasis on the sky and the stars and the moon. And they have different calendars, of mm-hmm. course, but much of the food that they do or the rituals that they do is the same. It's called something different and it's eaten at a different time. And mm-hmm. It was just marvelous. And then I heard a comment from a person, and I'm not going to say who it was, but this person said that someone she knew listened to the show and said,
it's a nice comment, right?
It's a very nice comment.
Because I'm closing my ears.
It's a good comment.
Okay, good. I'm not, I'm really fragile.
Oh, Tom. Somebody listened to the show. Prior to having listened to the show, mm-hmm. he was watching, I don't know, a news channel about all the bombings and mm-hmm. the war and the horribleness that's going on. And it was really sad about that. And then the show came on. And this person said, it was just amazing the transformation in how he felt, because he said he knew that there were these two women who didn't know each other from completely different backgrounds, completely different religious beliefs or names, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not that different, but, and it brought him to tears because it's just the idea that it's gathering with food. It's food that is the vehicle for peace.
Yeah.
And we, you know, so he talked about that.
And getting two individuals together who, we all think you think are different.
And they're not.
They're not.
And they're not. And they loved each other. And it was so interesting from my point of view to see how the two of them, by the end of the show, were best friends. You know,
they
really liked each other and they shared, you know, there was like, well, Sharon, when you do this, how does that work? And then Sharon was, well, Celine, when we do this, then you do that. And it was like, it all melded. And I was really taken by it. It's probably one of the most deeply meaningful shows I've ever done.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations
Thank you. It was really fun. But it goes back to, which I know you believe as well, back to my fundamental belief that if we all would just sit down at the table and have dinner or breakfast or anything, tea and a piece of cake, with our differing beliefs and our wild imaginations, the world would heal. I mean, food is a vehicle for peace. I really believe that. And I try to offer it as often as I can.
Right, when you have it, the distance is just across a table. It opens up, if I can mix my metaphors, a lot of doors. You know?
Well, I have doors on my table. Yeah. So, yeah, well, thanks for asking about that.
I told you about, there's the cookbook, or there's the two gentlemen. I think they're both from Jerusalem, but one is Jewish, one is Muslim, and they have a restaurant, I believe, in London.
Oh.
And they have a book out, a cookbook, and my wife can tell me about it, but it is...
Oh, is it called Jerusalem?
I think it may be.
Yeah, that might be
Ottolenghi.
I think that could be.
Yeah. Is it Ottolenghi?
I don't know. That could be.
It's a great cookbook.
Oh, I've got plenty, amazing. And I've got another one of his books, but yeah, he's... I think that is... If it's Jerusalem, I think that's his. Yeah. I didn't realize he had a partner in that, but...
Well, I'm not sure that that's him, but it is...
But it's in that vein. Yeah. Well, and it goes back to that total belief system. And speaking of chefs...
Yes.
Can we talk about our favorite TV chef?
Yes, we can. We have a boy crush and a girl crush on our latest obsession.
Yeah. Well, his name is Adam Byatt, B-Y-A-T-T, and he has a restaurant in London called Trinity.
Yeah.
And actually, Tom, you introduced me to him.
I did. I saw him on, I think, on some Instagram post. And what I liked about him was, you know, it's like, since we're talking in cooking terms, think of like a big roast. And you trim off all the fat, and you just get the solid, good, lean roast. And that's what he is.
Oh, what an interesting analogy.
In terms of cooking, is he's not trying to make funny faces or be a big dork or be smarter than everybody else. He's just who he is, and he's just solid. He knows everything.
He knows everything.
And it's not like he says it in a... Well, no, why would you do that? You need to do... You know,
of course you do it this way.
He's just very matter of fact. He's sort of like... He has a... they're different, but you know how, like, when you watch Jacques Pepin, you realize he's just sharing his love of food with you,
right?
And his knowledge, and that's how
Adam is.
He's a Michelin star restaurant.
Three,
baby. Mm-hmm. And but everything he does is really interesting. I think that's the core of the show.
Well, and his way of teaching, he actually really teaches. He's not a showman.
Yeah.
This isn't about his being a showman. This is about sharing his love of the process, quality,
why
the
you
ingredients,
do something the way you do it.
Why you do it that way.
And I also like that even in a 3-star Michelin restaurant, mm-hmm. he's not taking food for granted. Like, he doesn't throw away
stuff. He wastes nothing.
Like, he was making the one we got to make, Linda.
What, the salmon one?
Okay. But first of all, I want the short ribs.
He makes my God.
He makes a short rib recipe.
We have to make that.
I'm drooling on my microphone. But when he explains it, you know, like, he doesn't explain, but it's clear that in a restaurant of that caliber, you can't just serve them any way. They have to be really
beautiful,
trimmed. And so he has a lot of these short rib parts that are left over. And he goes, and then those go to the downstairs restaurant, which is
for cottage pie.
Mm-hmm. And then you watch his cottage pie thing. You're like, oh, man, I'm thinking there's no downstairs there on that.
Except it's upstairs.
It's upstairs.
I've become obsessed.
Yeah.
It's a habit now.
He's a good one to be obsessed with.
He's really a good, good teacher. So he's on YouTube.
Another thing he does? Mm. Do you know what I like? Is like, sort of like, and I don't want to be harsh, but you know, so many people, like, I'm not a chef. I'm a home cook.
Me too.
You know?
Yeah.
But I love how when you watch people on all sorts of social media that it shouldn't necessarily be about you, you know, even though we make the show about
us. It's about the food.
But this
show is not about you, Tom.
It's not about me. No, but what is funny is, like, I love it when somebody's making a recipe and I'll look at that recipe that I've seen 8 trillion times and they'll go like, I developed this recipe when I was,
you go,
you didn't develop squat.
I know.
You know, he got it out of that cookbook. So what's great about Adam Byatt as this, you know, revered chef in London and great human being, is he gives credit to every single person
he is responsible
for what he's showing you. Like, he'll go, I didn't think of this. This is from blah, blah, blah. I worked in that restaurant and, you know, and so-and-so taught me how.
And the other thing he does, though, that I do like is he'll say, okay, so this is how I do it. Now, other people do it a different way and they say that that's the right way, but not me. I like it this way. So he's acknowledging that there are other methods, and he is not the king of the world kind of guy.
No, he really is that sort of nice moderation of knowledge and joy of sharing you know, something with you. You know what I watched last night in your honor?
What?
I was going to go to bed and I go, I'm going to watch one more Adam. and I was watching the pâté choux, basically the pastry for cream puffs. So he did it with one with cracklin, which is a sweet.
Yeah, I saw that one too.
It's really good. And so he did cream puffs, and then he did one where he
made it look so
like
easy.
A mousse that he put in it for canapés and. Yeah, baby.
Well, the one I was obsessed with yesterday was the salmon one where it's salmon en croûte. And I'm telling you, he said, this is very complicated. But we're going to do it. I'm going to show you how to do it. And oh my God, it's very complicated, but it's so beautiful. And you use a whole fish. It's like a whole fish.
Is it puff pastry or is
it? Yeah, it's good puff pastry. And he fillets it and he cuts the skin off and he takes the little bones out.
No bones, not a bone. God bless him.
And he shows you how to do all that. And then you have this big long fillet that's like 2 feet long laying on, you have two of them, two halves, laying on the cutting board. And he carves a tunnel in the middle of each one of them. And then in that, he places soft-boiled eggs. And then he puts a scallop mousse out of the pastry bag on top of that.
That'll work.
And then he puts the other filet on top of that filet. And he does something else to the outside. And then he wraps it in something. Oh, he uses crepes inside.
Excuse me?
Crepe.
Oh, okay.
Crepe.
Well, no, you were doing a little too down home country. Crepe.
Crepes.
Put some crepe in it. Anyone want no crepe in my crepes?
It was crepes. It's called crepe.
Crepes and zap.
So he puts those in there too and then serves it with, you know, some Bernaise or Hollandaise or something. But my God, it's wrapped in parchment, of course.
Yeah.
And then on top of the parchment, he puts this design of parchment on it it must take hours. It would take me hours, but I think one day I want to try it. I'd have to watch the video a few more times.
Yeah, we should look and see if he has a beef Wellington too.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, I think I've seen everything. I even saw one that he talked about where they filmed in his house with his wife, his darling wife, because it was a, here's what the chef's kitchen at home looks like.
Oh, that's great.
And the kind of things that he cooks at home. And his daughter is just graduated from culinary school somewhere.
Oh, nice.
And she's a chef too. So
it's nice when you, like, as I listen to us, I'm going, we are gushing. But
I know. But what's kind of
nice,
sick.
But the good part of it is, like, he's the real thing. I think what happens is you see so many people that are just posers, or they're trying to get numbers of influencers. Or
you look at some of the modern ones, like, I'm sorry, I'll name names, like Ramsay, whom I cannot stomach.
I'm not a
And the other one I can't stomach is that guy with the hair,
Fieri. Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't take it. You know, it's like they're not even cooks, really. I mean, it's a showmanship thing, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, I suppose that's enough about my one true love.
It's good. Well, that's okay. Let's see if he wants to be on the show.
Yeah, let's ask him. We could write him a letter.
We could.
Yeah, we'll call
Dear
him.
Dear diary. Today.
Yeah.
I ask Adam.
Ask Adam. Yeah. So
that's funny. We did go on about that, didn't we?
He's
worth it. Yeah, you know, take a look for him. Adam Byatt, BYATT.
Yeah, he's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
So what Truman's pointing at me.
I'm
what?
Just pointing that I have Trinity Restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
This show.
I've looked at the menu.
Oh, baby.
Isn't it?
Oh,
baby. It's a pre-fee, and dinner's $125, which is fine. It's four courses.
Yeah.
And lunch is $105.
You're treating yourself.
It's cheap.
I mean,
it's cheap for
For a three-star?
Yeah.
Maybe those were, you know, $19.99 prices.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I was
surprised.
We should check and see if they have a dress code.
Oh, they do. Trust
I'm
me.
Pretty
I'm
sure
looking
they,
at pictures.
I don't think you'd have to wear a bow tie, but you'd have to have a jacket, I'm sure. I mean,
I can round one up.
I could round one up too. Well, maybe we should go.
Okay.
I think that would be fun.
Well, there I was in London with my friend Linda and Truman, and we were having a fabulous time.
Eating duck pate.
Every day. Drinking it down with some lovely champagne and claret.
God, and don't you just, all the people that are traveling right now and eating all this wonderful food and going all these lovely places, and here I'm sitting in the rain going, I really want to go somewhere.
Baking incredible coconut cream pies.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true.
Come on.
That's true. I mean, I've really been enjoying my life, to tell you the truth.
No, absolutely.
I really have.
I think that is the goal.
No matter what you're doing.
It is. Yeah. You know, it's enjoying the passage of your own time.
Mm-hmm.
And you find delight in the things and the people that are in your orbit.
Right. And I do.
Because a lot of times I look at people like they'll, because it's really, you get bombarded with everyone. You go like, God, how much money these people have?
Mm-hmm.
Where they're always traveling and they're always doing stuff. And you're going, you know, but then you're looking at them across the table from each other and going, I don't think they're having that good of a time.
It doesn't look like it's that
Not
fun.
That I wish that on them, but sometimes you want to go like, okay.
Or you go, you know, I know a little too much about those people.
That's right.
Oh, we're divulging secrets here.
This is where Tom and Linda rearrange their halos and apologize profusely.
And they start.
We're petty. Let's just face it.
Yes, we've always been petty.
We had a tough week a couple of weeks ago where we were just like, if another person shows me, you know, the steps they took and I don't know, the Amalfi Coast or something, it's going to go. Mm-hmm. Ah!
I can't take it. Yeah. Well, I made a few steps on Vashon too.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, you know, I mean. It's a.
I tell you what.
Well, I had you over for lunch last week. That was fun.
Oh, that was great. That was the best. That was the best lunch in town that day. I had. It really was. I was so happy.
It was so cheap.
And it was so. We had really good. She made great tomato soup, and then you had croissants, and she put
speck.
Speck. I always go schep.
No, speck.
Speck. Please tell the people what speck is.
Speck is, I had recently had a trip to PFI in Seattle.
Pacific Food Importers.
Thank you.
On Rainier Avenue.
Big John's. Yeah. And they have a huge case of Italian meat. and prosciutto, and they have some Spanish jamón, and you know, the one, and look at my eyes.
That would be starting. That would be a great song, like Mortadella, Mortadella, da 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 da.
It would be.
We should come up with one.
It's kind of like I've been everywhere.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that.
I've been everywhere, and speck is a it's a dry cured form of pork. I can tell you exactly what it is. Actually, it's from the pork leg. And it originates in the northern part of Italy. But it's heavily influenced by Germanic tradition. And it's a little like prosciutto in texture, but it's a little smoky.
Yeah, would you say it's a little drier, too?
It's dry, because it's dry cured. And then but it's seasoned with spices like juniper. I can't even say it. And it's air dried in the mountains. So it's just, it hangs outside.
They hang it up with little clothespins.
on the line. Yeah. So that's speck. And then prosciutto is a whole pork leg. And it's a long process. It's rubbed with salt first, and then it's hung to air dry as well. Anywhere from 12 to 36 months.
Yeah, that is, you know, that is something special. Especially my favorite for that. It's everybody's favorite, I guess. But I love it wrapped in melon.
Oh, I know.
Or a
peach. Know. Yeah,
but melon's actually a honeydew baby.
Well, the speck was pretty good in a croissant.
Oh, it was. What else was in there? It was really good.
That's it.
Did you pan
butter.
Fry it or something?
No,
or?
I toasted the croissants.
Oh, okay.
And then I just put butter and that meat, because you don't really want anything to interfere with that meat.
And refresh my memory. Do we have dessert?
You know, we did not have dessert that day. And after you left, I thought we didn't have dessert.
I wondered why I was crying on the way home.
Yeah, that's what it was, I guess.
But did you get the speck at BFI?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think it was like...
I think we were too full for dessert.
No, we weren't. I just didn't have anything.
Well, I like your serving sizes. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. It was fun to have you. We had a good chat.
It makes you feel welcome.
It was nice. Yeah.
And Diego, Linda's cat, was there. He was in good mood.
He likes to make his presence known.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. But I, you know, there's a whole study that we could do about Italian meats.
Oh, yeah.
I really didn't know that until, I mean, I know what I like, but there were meats there I'd never heard of, like Bresaola. Do you know about that? I'd never even heard of that term.
I think I went to a school with a kid named Bresaola. But
it's beef.
Oh.
And it's made from some lean cut, I have round probably. And then it's air dried for 3 months. And I haven't tasted it, but now I'm dying to taste it. It's beef. It's not pork. Everything else is pork. So...
Then
what I really loved,
what?
I got mortadella. Oh, and you know, do you know mortadella, Truman? People compare it to bologna, but it's thin paper, thin sliced.
Like and it's got pimento loaf or kind of a...
Well, kind of, but not really.
Okay.
An American mortadella has olives in it.
Yeah.
This that I got at PFI had...
pistachios?
Yes, thank you. Yeah. I couldn't think of the P word. Uh-huh. Pistachios in it, and it's sliced paper thin. Uh-huh. There's no big chunk of bologna-looking stuff, you know?
They have a pizza with mortadella.
I bet that's good at Lunetta.
Cafe Lunetta, yeah.
I'm sure it's good. I saw that on the menu.
Yeah, it was
the
good.
Other
I had it
I
once.
Thought,
I loved
oh,
it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah.
I like it because, you know, pizzas with the more on a pizza for me, the better. I'm not like a... I'm not a purist. I like a lot of stuff on
do
it.
Do you?
Yeah.
How do you feel about pineapple?
You know, it has a place. I wouldn't choose it, but you know, I don't think it deserves the mockery in which
Thank
it's
you.
Giving.
I don't think so either. And you know, it can cause fist fights.
Yeah, it's
I mean,
silly.
People are just adamant about it, that it doesn't belong on. And you know, my favorite pizza is pepperoni and pineapple and jalapeno and anchovies.
Oh, that sounds that would be the total Nygaard. I'm going to order a total Nygaard.
A total Nygaard. Pineapple, anchovies, pepperoni, and what did I say?
Jalapeno.
Yeah, jalapeno.
Yeah. You know, I would say...
They got spicy, sweet,
fat.
Yeah.
I like... I'm not... pepperoni... Pep, pepper... Pep, What's it called?
Pepperoni.
Pepperoni, jeez.
Boy, we can't talk today.
We can. I'm still thinking about pie. the pizzas I like, well, there, when I used to live in Seattle, I used to like Pagliacci pizza.
Oh, yeah.
And they used to have a really great pesto pizza and artichoke heart and like white cheeses.
Yeah,
that was killer.
Those are good.
And then just the, sort of their traditional, like, which was like
pizza.
Sausage, mushroom.
Yeah,
and
I like those too.
I don't think
there's any pizza I don't like, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I get a little irritated with like fancy schmancy ones where people are trying to do Thai pizza or,
I'm not a fan of barbecued chicken.
I mean, it's okay.
Sorry, I like that with the California one.
No, those are good. They're just not a pizza. But maybe now I'm being what I don't. I eschew is just being like a pizza snob. Mm-hmm. You can like whatever you want on a pizza.
Yeah, you can.
All right, I have one more pizza story.
Mm.
I was in Nome, Alaska.
And oh, where are you?
I love Truman.
I know Truman.
And my friend.
North Alaska.
We went to a pizza place.
Uh-huh. Were you flying at the time?
Yeah, okay. I was. And we went to a pizza place. And I said, do you like anchovies? Oh, yeah, I like everything. I said, you sure you like anchovies? Yeah, I like everything. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So I ordered it with anchovies.
Look at that look on his face.
He took one bite and he said, wow, has this got seal oil on it? What is it? I started laughing. That's anchovies.
It's anchovies. I love anchovies.
You know, Truman, is it okay if I say what you used to do?
Of course.
I was a pilot for Alaska Airlines. And what's funny is I used to work for Alaska Airlines, and Truman will be the first one to agree with me on this, I think. But the crews were always, the flight crews were so good about knowing what station we landed in had the best of what they had.
Oh, absolutely.
So like Sitka was pie. Sitka had great
Sitka pies.
Oh.
And I think they had cinnamon rolls in Ketchikan.
And in Petersburg, the guys always had smoked salmon.
That's right.
That they made.
There was a lot of trading going on.
Oh, well, sure. I bet there was. I bet there was. Yeah.
That was a fun part of it.
So how do we get on pizza, I wonder?
What's that?
I said, how did we start talking about pizza? That's not on our agenda.
No, it wasn't on our agenda, but you can always talk about it. You know, okay, one more story that's a little sidetracking about Alaska. When I was working up there and I was working on the ticket counter in Juneau, and there was a woman who would come by through all the time, and she was older, and she was at the Pioneer Home in Sitka, and she'd visit friends in Juneau. And and we got to be friends. And she brought me a jar of, I wasn't sure what it was. And I go, Sally, what is this? And she goes, oh, it's seal fat.
Oh,
awesome. I go, what do you do with it? She goes, oh, it's just really good, like a dip. She goes,
dip.
I like chips. Chips and seal fat. And I go, boy, there's two worlds converging.
Oh, man. You know, really?
Seal fat.
Did you try it?
It's oily. It's an acquired taste, you know.
I wonder what it would be like with Truman, who fries his potatoes in duck fat. What would it be like if you did it in seal fat?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's terrible.
Terrible?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an acquired taste.
It's
obviously.
Definitely. Just like we are.
Yeah. You had an experience at Winco last week.
Oh, that's right. I was going to...
Tell me about that.
I wanted to... It got me talking about grocery store security.
And etiquette.
And etiquette. I was at, I went off island. I was off island for a couple of reasons. And I stopped at a grocery store, this grocery store, Winco, over in Tacoma. And I was getting all my little bulky items and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had my basket ready to go. And like a good boy,
I brought
my bags, and they're both thermal, big thermal bags, because most of the stuff was perishable. And so I'm going up and I'm putting it on the line and chit-chatting with the checker. And then it's like, you know, sometimes when you have something that isn't there that you thought was there, and it's like suspended animation, you kind of, you stare at the checker, you stare at your cart, you stare at what you bought. You're looking around and going like, I'm missing something. I'm missing my bags. Where did my bags go? And I go, somebody stole my bags. And he goes, nah, why would somebody steal your bags? I said, excuse me, those are $7.98 a piece, like, and they are thermal.
Premium bags.
Premium Ziploc bags, baby. He said, that's just nuts. I go, it is nuts. But somebody took, because what I do is I park my car. I'm a car, a cart parker and a walk arounder.
Oh, you know? Okay.
I don't push my cart everywhere because that's ridiculous for me.
Okay.
I like to like put it in a safe location, apparently not. And then, and so he said, he's the one guy, the one checker next to him said, well, we probably have it on film. And I said, I'm sure
CCTV.
So, but then it was funny because he went to go look at it on film. I said, it doesn't matter. I'm sure the person's already gone. I'm not going to, you know, he goes, well, no, we'll see what it was. And I said, it's okay. But he came back and he said, oh, they're looking at the film for something else right now, so it'll be about 20 minutes. I said, it's okay.
Never mind.
I'll get my 8-cent plastic bags against my will and take those home. But it made me think about, you know, our public service announcements for the week is don't leave stuff in your cart. And it's not so much even about my $14 worth of thermal bags, but a member of my family, like she had her purse stolen in a grocery cart. And when you walk around a grocery store and you see so many purses are open sitting in that top that it's just easy pickings.
Yeah.
And this person had her stolen, it was like the grocery store manager said it happens every single day.
Well, you know, I was at Fred Meyer a few years ago and I tend to do kind of the cart park thing only according to neighborhood. Like if I'm in the produce, I'll just leave it sitting there while I go get the carrots.
The neighborhood
and the broccoli.
Of the grocery store.
The neighborhood in the grocery store.
Dry
like
goods,
the vegetable
dry
neighborhood.
Dry goods look safe. Yeah, dry goods look safe.
Yeah, yeah, dry goods are safe. I can, and the vegetables.
But
you know.
never do it in frozen foods.
And don't do it in front of the beer.
Oh, never.
Don't do it in front of the beer. Anyway, I was picking out my vegetables, doing whatever I was doing. My cart was behind me and my purse was in it and I didn't think twice about it. And suddenly this man walks up to me with my purse in his hand. And I looked at him and I said, excuse me. And he said, this is your purse, right? And I said, yes. And he said, ma'am, you should never leave your purse. See how easy that was? He said, I could have just taken it. Don't leave your purse. And he handed it back to me, you know. It was So there's your public service announcement
as well,
you know. And I haven't left it in the cart since. I mean,
I thought maybe he went, girl, where'd you get this? This is
nice. Well, I do get that, too.
I'm sure you,
know,
you do.
I do carry
style
a nice purse.
Style that you are.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's an interesting story. And I can't quite imagine stealing the bags. I mean, I can understand why people take a purse.
Yeah.
I don't agree or like it, but I can understand there's money and there's credit cards and but the bags.
I was being cased on the way down the coffee aisle. I felt a presence.
Did you see anyone lurking?
I kind of think I knew who it was.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody was carrying all his goods with him.
And he needed someplace to put them.
Shifty-eyed.
Yeah. All shifty-eyed and eyeing your basket.
Exactly.
Oh, dear.
Hey, do you know, before the show goes away, I wanted to tell you another thing I did this week, if I may.
Okay.
I was at
of course you may.
Okay, thanks. I was at a friend's birthday party, his 70th. Lovely affair.
I heard about it.
It was at the Grange.
Mm-hmm.
The Grange, if you were on Vashon and you don't know, is just right up at the top of the parking lot in... on your way to the ferry, and Jennifer Potter is now going to change it into a grocery store, which is going to be fantastic, I'm sure. But anyway, make a long story short, there was a cocktail expert there. Her name was Amelia, and her business was Sylvan Spirits.
Sylvan Spirits, yeah.
And it totally opened. I don't know where. I'm not a big drinker, and I have it occasionally, but I don't really focus on it too much. But she had mocktails, and so I'm all over the mocktail now.
You know, that's one of the things that's on our topics for this show, but we'll have to put it off to next time.
Okay, so for mocktails are, as it sounds, cocktails without alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But this was one of the most flavorful drinks I've ever had.
I love that.
She told me she's going to be at the farmer's market this summer.
Good.
It's called Sylvan Spirits.
I'll be looking for that.
Yeah.
I was, after you mentioned the mocktail thing, I started looking up some recipes for, you know, refreshing spring drinks that are non-alcoholic.
Yeah.
And let's share those next time.
That's a great way to end the show.
Yeah, it is. So next time we'll talk about spring cocktails and mocktails.
That's right. And
and squirrel's tails.
And cakes with ants on them.
Yeah. I guess we have to sign off now. Aww. I can hear some music coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So nice to hang out with you, sister.
It's really good to see you, Tom, and I always enjoy our conversations.
And we get the added bonus. It's always a bonus to have Truman here.
Oh, Truman. You're just
we
a
love you,
terrific
Truman.
Guy.
Thank you. Thank
we
you.
Love you to
it.
Death. Thank you for listening, everybody. And we'll see you. I'll see you next week or the week. I don't know.
Ciao,
we're
Morta
on here
Bella.
A lot. Ciao, bella. Bye
bye. Or Mortobella.
Mortadella.
Mortadella, excuse me.
Bye-bye.